You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Lucinda Larnock. This is the WFHB local news for Thursday, January 21st, 2021.
Later in the program, we have an excerpt from the latest edition of Bring It On. Hosts Clarence Boone and Liz Mitchell speak with Dr. Khalid El Hakim, who was the MLK Day keynote speaker for the city of Bloomington. He is the founder and curator of the Black History 101 Mobile Museum, a collection of over 7,000 original artifacts of Black memorabilia, dating from the transatlantic slave trade to hip-hop culture eras.
Also coming up, we have Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted and produced by Richard Fish. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Thursday, January 21st. I'm Jake Jacobson. 3,733 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in Indiana on Wednesday, according to the Indiana State Department of Health. There were 64 newly reported deaths. Locally, Monroe County saw 78 new confirmed cases yesterday, as well as one confirmed COVID-19 death. Lawrence County reported 19 new cases and one confirmed death. Brown County reported 3 new cases. The age requirement to sign up to receive the COVID-19 vaccination from the Indiana Department of Health is currently 70 years of age and older. If you qualify, you can sign up by visiting ourshot.in.gov or by calling 211 for assistance. This morning, the Indiana Democratic Party joined Indiana Republicans in calling on Governor Eric Holcomb to prioritize COVID-19 vaccinations for teachers. In a press release, Indiana Democrats cited President Joe Biden's recommendation that vaccines be immediately available for essential workers, which includes teachers, and Americans 65 and older. John Zodi, Indiana Democratic Party chairman, believes that this is a necessary step to getting back to normal, saying, quote, "Indiana's teachers are essential workers, and the faster they receive a vaccine, the quicker we can return to some sense of normalcy in our public schools. The idea is not only backed by both Republicans and Democrats, but it's common sense," end quote. That's all for your local news brief. From WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb touted the state's recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic in his State of the State address on Tuesday. Despite over 600,000 total positive cases and over 9,000 total deaths from the virus, the governor's State of the State address was in many ways defined by coronavirus. The speech was pre-recorded in a studio. Despite a year dominated by the pandemic, Governor Holcomb said 2021 should be about moving forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, I began tonight by saying this has been a year unlike any other. The pandemic has pulled forward many trends that were already well underway, and this plays to Indiana's strengths. Our decisions, our discipline, now enable us to do things that many other states won't be able to do for years to come. We're lucky to have been chosen to lead at this moment. And I will say it once again, for Indiana, the future is now, and the world continues to hear Indiana's engines roar. That's why I'm more excited and eager than ever to work together to build a state of opportunity for all Hoosiers.
One of the key elements of the governor's speech included the coronavirus vaccine, now available to seniors 70 years old and older.
We know that older age itself puts one in the most at-risk category of dying and being hospitalized from COVID-19. And our seniors are getting vaccinated. And that's not only key to getting their lives back, but ultimately our state's full physical and fiscal recovery as well.
However, the demand for a vaccine outweighs the state's capacity to administer them, as seniors have reported long wait times to make an appointment and many received error messages on the state's website. During his speech, the governor laid out his 2021 agenda, which included teacher pay, COVID-19 relief, and police reform.
In fact, in my budget, I've already mentioned the $377 million new dollars proposed to increase school budgets, plus schools are also expected to receive hundreds of millions of dollars in additional pandemic federal aid. In the Teacher Compensation Commission report, identified 37 different state and local ideas to reduce costs and increase revenues for our public schools. And we should examine them closely to put more funds in teachers' pockets. When, not if, when we do this, we will be one of the best in the Midwest for teacher pay, and we'll be better able to attract and retain teacher talent, including attracting more minority candidates. We know COVID-19 has devastated other parts of our economy and people. We've experienced what's called a K-shaped recovery, meaning while many Hoosiers have continued to do well during the pandemic, others have been hit hard. Our restaurants, airlines, hotels, and leisure industries, and many Hoosiers who work in them have taken it on the chin. That's why our Indiana Economic Development Corporation will continue to build and allocate targeted grant recovery resources so these businesses and people can build bridges to the other side of these tough times. We'll get our state police officers outfitted with body cameras. We'll get our diversity data dashboard up and running, as well as completing and sharing the outside review of our state's law enforcement academy and agencies. We'll get our state's first ever cabinet level chief equity, inclusion, and opportunity officer to improve and report on diversity outcomes across all state government.
The governor also touched on construction projects, the importance of rural broadband internet connectivity, infant mortality, and the state's economy. To watch the full speech, visit WFHB.org.
Beacon Incorporated Executive Director Forrest Gilmore requested continued support of weekend services from the Monroe County Commissioners. Gilmore spoke of the request during their January 20th meeting.
Right now, the approximate cost of the program is about $66,000. And so the county and the city and originally corporate sponsors have funded the third of that, and really appreciate that. So we're continuing to request that so we can keep going with keeping the weekend open.
Gilmore mentioned over 21,000 meals new were served in 2020 on weekend services. Commissioners unanimously approved the request. Also during the meeting, commissioners considered a request to help fund alternate spaces for people experiencing homelessness at the Seminary Park encampment. Commissioner Penny Githens presented the request.
The county government and other governmental units are supporting social services agencies, including United Way and the Community Foundation, and are working diligently and in a coordinated manner to provide a safe alternative to the camping. And sleeping outside is not a safe, I think it's supposed to be alternate to the current arrangement. Prior to providing a safe alternative will do further harm, including increased risks of COVID-19 exposure and transmission, and pushing homelessness into higher risk areas. In an open letter to the mayor of Bloomington, John Hamilton, attached as Exhibit A, was circulated, and each commissioner individually agreed with the letter and signed onto the letter. However, formal action by the commissioners in a public meeting is legally required in order for the letter to be effectively signed by the Monroe County Board of Commissioners.
Githens mentioned a request of $20,000 was made by Gilmore to support a winter low-barrier shelter living alternative to the campsite. Commissioner Julie Thomas stated coronavirus aid, relief and economic security act grant funds would be used to support the shelter.
We're intending to use CARES dollars for this because this really is a COVID-related issue. And so that is our intention. It still needs to be to go through the council approval next week, and just in terms of our general CARES allocation, but this would fit under the shelter mode of the CARES funding. This is such an important thing, and we don't want folks to be camping in Seminary Park or on Rogers and the county property, because that's especially not safe. We want to ensure that there are plenty of beds, plenty of space, and we want to get folks into safety and warmth.
Gilmore stated the winter shelter was created around survey responses, which questioned why people were not going to shelters and camping outside. He mentioned more space was needed than originally thought.
So I think what was most impactful about that is, again, we weren't trying to kind of find out how many people were out there as much as we were trying to find out why people weren't seeking shelter. And in the process of that survey, we discovered there were a lot more people experiencing street homelessness than we realized, and a lot more people at Seminary Park than we realized. I think our more on the ground estimate was 15 to 20. But when we did the actual by name survey, we discovered the numbers were substantially higher. And that just told us very clearly that regardless of the obstacles that people have to accessing the current shelters, there just simply wasn't enough sheltering for people in our community, and that we needed to find some kind of response to that quickly.
Gilmore mentioned the shelter will be off the Beeline Trail next to Switchyard Park. Commissioners unanimously approved the resolution.
The Monroe County Public Library Board of Trustees heard design plan updates for the new library branch. Architect Chris Lloyd spoke about energy efficiency designs during their January 20th meeting.
Each of the entries, the main entry has a vestibule, which acts as an airlock, helping to keep the warm or cold air from rushing into the building as people enter and exit. There is also a vestibule associated with the staff entry over here on the west. And then down on the lower level, as you come in from the parking garage, there is a lower level vestibule here separating that from the stair and the rest of the library.
Lloyd mentioned the wall system would include 3 inches of insulation. He mentioned large glass windows would take advantage of natural light.
We're currently doing research on what glass we will be using and specifying for the project, making sure that we're providing the most efficient in terms of heat gain, heat loss. On the east side and on the south side, with the aluminum curtain wall system that makes up those large expanses of windows, we're looking at sunshade devices. On the south, they will most likely be horizontal sunshade devices that help shade the windows from the southern light coming in, particularly in the window. And that will help with glare and bright light, but still allow the light in.
Lloyd mentioned eastern and western facing windows would utilize vertical fins for shading. Circle Design mentioned individual rooms could be temperature controlled. They mentioned air purifying systems are under consideration.
There's a couple options. One, you can do UV light on the cooling coil, and so that kills any of the bacterial growth or anything that's on the cooling coil itself. And then there's also a couple different types of air systems, like bipolar ionization or photocatalytic oxidation. And so these are things that you put in the units. It goes into the airstream, and it kind of blasts apart the any of the contaminants and stuff, so then they can get filtered out by your regular filters. So We're exploring all options at this point. We've not settled on anything just yet.
Lloyd said no windows would be available to open.
Planner Drew Myers presented a planned unit development amendment, an expansion into a new PUD to be called Clear Creek Urban. Myers mentioned the petitioners proposed to develop a mixed-use development on the new PUD during their January 19th meeting.
This proposal of the subdivision, or excuse me, the planned unit development is a mix of attached townhomes, multifamily residences, and commercial space. The petitioner states in their written statement that the development is designed to provide additional housing options for working individuals and families within the county and act as a neighborhood center for Clear Creek community. The development will include multiple road connections and alternative transportation connections, such as a multi-use path. And the petitioner states that the development will be built in three phases over 3 years.
Myers stated the development site is at the intersection of South Rogers Street and West, that road. He mentioned the site plan includes two drainage areas with additional stormwater drainage along the South Rogers Street. Commissioner Jerry Pitsford said the development seemed out of place.
I think five separate buildings is too much here. My first real question is, how appropriate is this space really for multifamily use? I realize that it's in proximity to a school building, but given the physical constraints, is it really appropriate for multifamily use? So that's one question. The second question would be, I look at really large monolithic structures, even if they're separate buildings, in quotes. It's a monolithic structure against a fairly well-traveled road. Is this too urban, really, in comparison to anything in downtown Bloomington? What do we see in downtown Bloomington where you see this sort of a monolithic, though separate building structure at this height? It seems disproportionate.
Commissioner Larry Wilson stated the proposed development placed too much density on the lot. Commissioner Tron Onright Randolph stated the area is facing expansion.
If you go to the north, that's where a half a mile from the Fullerton Pike extension, which is going to be a huge thoroughfare component to our network here. So So I wanted to note that Fullerton Pike's a half a mile to the north, and the new library is going to be a half a mile to the north. So this area is growing and changing, and I think maybe a traffic study might be justified, but at the same time, I'm not too certain about that, because with the interstate basically cutting off that road, a lot of people are getting around in that area quite differently nowadays.
Petitioner Tambi Wickle Cassidy mentioned surrounding schools and services attract families, but the area lacks apartment and condominium living. Resident Liz Irwin spoke in favor of the development during the meeting.
We've heard about improvements to safety and walkability for those of us who live nearby, but it may also attract some other people from the community that want to visit, whether they're using the trails or needing to walk along that road. I think it's super exciting to see investment in this area. And I particularly like the concept of bringing back the Clear Creek of older times. I think it's going to be wonderful to have a coffee shop or other destination to visit while using the trails, or not only for those who live here, but for others who may want to come and use the amenities.
Commissioners will hold a second hearing during a future meeting.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, we have an excerpt from Bring It On, our public affairs program, which airs each Monday and is available wherever you get your podcasts. In today's excerpt, hosts Clarence Boone and Liz Mitchell speak with Dr. Khalid El Hakim, who was the MLK Day keynote speaker for the city of Bloomington. Dr. El Hakim is the founder and curator of the Black History 101 Mobile Museum, a collection of over 7,000 original artifacts of Black memorabilia, dating from the transatlantic slave trade era to hip-hop culture. He will speak on The Truth Hurts, Black History and Healing the Racial Divide.
Those three questions posed by Dr. King, your reflection on the three evils of racism, poverty, and militarism,
if you can give us an observation on that, and then from there we'll move into other areas. Especially, I want to talk about that mobile Black History Museum that you put together.
Yeah. So, in 1967, this is several years after the March on Washington, and a lot of people know King's legacy through a very narrow viewpoint, and mainly we get King via the "I Have a Dream" speech and the letter from the Birmingham jail. And a lot of people don't know a whole lot about King from 63 up until the end of his life. So in 1967, he gives a speech in New York where he identifies the three evils being racism, poverty, and militarism. And when I think about those three evils from a 2021 standpoint, we realize that a lot of things have not changed over time. We know the Kerner report that came out in 1967 also identified white racism as being one of the main reasons, the number one reason for the riots that were going on during that time. So when we look at America today and we see what's going on in the country right now, racism is still, number one one of the number one problems and issues that we have. And when we see, if we look at DC today, and we see the military presence in DC represents that issue, that we have in this conversation right now about how much racism has permeated in the law enforcement agencies around the country, as well as in some aspects of the military. And these are some questions that we have to start asking because of the militias that we see out who are in military gear and military trained. And so we have to start having some conversations and identifying some of the roots of these ideologies and how they're affecting and threatening the American democracy right now. And then, of course, poverty, too. The Kerner report also mentioned that, and they did an up-to-date version just a few years ago, that even things in terms of Black home ownership has not changed at all from 1968 up until current times. So, we have to deal with this issue of poverty and homelessness and other aspects of our society. And then also, poverty is not just limited to finances. Poverty also looks at the standard of the inferiority of morality and spiritual aspects of society too. So we're impoverished in other ways than just financial too. So there's a lot of questions that we have to bring to the table and have discussions about in terms of these three evils right now.
Well, you had mentioned poverty, and I associate that with entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And I had always had in my mind that desegregation helped but hurt in the ways of entrepreneurship. It wasn't until I saw your segment at the Columbus Metropolitan Club that you talked about hip hop, which is part of your one-on-one museum, as promoting entrepreneurship. And I never thought of it that way. And you mentioned all of the jobs that were created due to hip hop. I was just fascinated by that. Can you go into that more and explain that to our listening audience?
Absolutely. So hip hop as a culture, there's five elements to the culture. You have the DJ, you have the MC, you have the graffiti artists, you have the breakdancers, and then the fifth element of hip hop is knowledge of self. So the idea of that knowledge, bringing those four other elements of hip hop culture together, is very, very important to hip hop culture. But hip hop culture has provided avenues for many of us to make money and take care of ourselves. So early on in hip hop culture, when you have parties, you have to have people who promote the parties. So you have promoters, you have people who have to make the flyers. You have DJs and DJ equipment that has to be rented out. You have the MCs that have to be paid. It's so many aspects to this culture. But as it grew, the different industries within the culture also grew as well. So a lot of people don't recognize photography, for example, being a part of that culture. People who took photographs early on, the promo photos for artists, that was a job that hip hop provided for certain people. There's one of my mentors, his name is Ernie Panicoli. He's one of hip hop's most famous hip hop photographers, and he's been documenting hip hop for the past 40 years. But his job for many years was being the chief photographer for Word Up magazine. And so a lot of people don't think about photography being an avenue for entrepreneurship or magazines. And there's so many publications that have come out that's focused on hip hop. And so you create, so there's a whole new area of hip hop journalism that was created. So you have to have people who are in PR, people who are reporters. I recently founded the Michigan Hip Hop Archive. So in the Michigan Hip Hop Archive, we're specifically collecting the material culture of hip hop in Michigan. And it's not until I started looking at it through that lens that you recognize the radio personalities, the online radio formats that started because of hip hop. And just, you know, just offers so many different types of ways to become an entrepreneur. Another big thing is fashion, right? So fashion, there's so many designers that came up through the ranks through hip hop culture who have made a huge impact, not only on fashion nationally in America, but that impact has been felt globally. So there's many different type of areas where hip hop has created avenues in terms of entrepreneurship for people.
Up next, we have Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted and produced by Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
There are more con games, scams, swindles, and frauds going on today than ever before in human history. Because there are more people than ever before, and because we're more connected than ever before. So here's another look at classic con games to help you spot a swindle before you get stung. All modern cons are freshly painted variations on a finite number of classic scams that probably go all the way back to Australopithecus, and today we're going to look at two of them. Both of these need two or more scammers to work the con, but when swindlers work together, they almost always want you to believe they have no connection with each other, or at the very least, are working against each other. That deception sets up all the rest. And both have something else in common, hush money. The idea is simple and ancient. Scare the mark and then offer him a way out if he pays off. The tactic is also ancient. Catch the victim in a vulnerable position, give him no time to think, and keep up the pressure until he coughs up whatever the grifters are after, like money. The first one has been used by many lazy writers. The badger game. One fraudster lures the victim into a compromising position, like being naked in bed with somebody they shouldn't be naked in bed with, and then the second bursts in, maybe taking pictures, and threatens to expose the victim, unless the poor schnook coughs up some money. Sometimes the first con artist also pretends to be scared and pays up, but of course the fraudsters split the take. And then there's the smack game, which uses gaming to work the same con, with card games, video games, or any sort of contest for money. Again, it takes at least two scammers, and the victim has to believe they are strangers to each other. One swindler leaves for a time, and while he's gone, the other one offers to conspire with the victim to cheat the absent player. If the sucker agrees, they do this, but they get caught at it and threatened with something scary, from cops and lawsuits to violence. The fraudster who worked with the victim pretends to be even more scared, and both cough up the hush money. The sucker splits, and the fake victim gets his money back, and they both split the take. You see how this works? If the victim hadn't been greedy enough to try and cheat, he couldn't have been conned. A person who doesn't believe he's done anything wrong can't be threatened with exposure. The late, great W.C. Fields entitled one of his classic movies, "You Can't Cheat an Honest Man," and that's exactly what he meant. It's a basic lesson in life. Anytime you're tempted to step over the line, you better be keeping a hyper-sharp lookout for anyone who might be fixing to pull the rug out from under you. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, Swindlers never give a sucker an even break.